Andrew, welcome to the podcast. I'm pumped to be chatting today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lewis. It's great to be here.
Of course. I want you to give me a bit of an overview of what you're currently doing, because it's not your traditional kind of current main podcast host career path. So I'm curious kind of the set of things you're currently pouring yourself into.
Well, Lewis, one of the things that, you know, about me, for better or for worse, is that I always seem to pour myself into a lot. I like to be busy. I like to, you know, get my hands in a lot of different things and have a lot of different projects and things going on at the same time. So kind of to anchor it all, I have worked for a national management consulting firm the last 15 or so years called Morgan Franklin. And we can get into that a little bit, you know, maybe during the conversation, but that's my job. That's what I do. And I've had a variety of different roles at Morgan Franklin over the years. However, for the last 10, I've been in a business development role, a relationship building role, where I've had the good fortune of building a network of entrepreneurs and executives and folks, you know, all over the world. And in parallel with that, I've done over the years a variety of different charitable work and gotten involved in different volunteer committees. And I'm really involved at my alma mater, Penn State University. And I've built, through all that in the aggregate, a really eclectic network. And a few years ago, I had this idea that I wanted to essentially go on a journey where I would interview 100 people in my network and maybe some people kind of outside of my network and find out the secrets of success from people from all different walks of life. And as I was thinking through that, I've always kind of had this net giving mindset where I'd rather give than take. I'd rather kind of share more than own. And I said, you know, maybe a great way to do this is a podcast, because then I could go on this journey much like you have gone on, and I could talk to these people and the conversations could be out in the public domain and people could reach their own conclusions, draw their own conclusions with me helping to kind of guide them along the way. And since then, you know, I've had almost 170 conversations with Olympic athletes, professional athletes, TV stars, Grammy winners, CEOs, and other high performers from all walks of life. And we look at the techniques and the mindsets and the ideas that have powered their success. I'm also super passionate about the power of leading by example and getting your hands dirty and leading by example, modeling the behavior that you want to see in others. So as a part of that, I try and really uncover the examples of ways these people are leading by example. And it's just been an incredible journey. I'm involved in so many other things as well, but maybe we'll get into. But that's kind of the gist of it, Lewis.
I love it. I think that speaks to a lot of the threads you read on Twitter are kind of a common theme, not to like reduce the threads to something this simple, but a recurring element of what you discuss is basically some seemingly, or something a lot of people would assume is like a menial task that a person in a high ranking position did for a long amount of time. So like a basketball coach who was always doing laundry, or CEO who was making like cold calls, even as a CEO, and just writing handwritten thanks notes, like the small little things. And that being a through line of something that you appreciate and like to call out, I think is one of a cool distinctive piece of a lot of your content.
Yeah, Lewis, you're spot on. It's definitely a through line, you know, that's something that I'm passionate about. And I think comes out in a lot of the things I share on Twitter and other content mediums. And for me, I've kind of always believed that. Maybe I didn't always understand it. I didn't always know that it was something that was maybe, you know, unique about me or different about me, but it was something I think that's always been a part of me. My parents, you know, raised me to be humble, to take feedback, to be coachable, to lead by example, to not expect something of others that you wouldn't do yourself. And it kind of all came full circle for me in 2004. So in 2004, I was in college and I had this dream of working in sports. And I got an internship in minor league baseball. I was working for the AA affiliate of the New York Yankees, a team called the Trenton Thunder. They were with the Yankees at the time. And on the first day, I show up, I put on a nice pair of pants and a polo, and I think I'm going to learn the business of sports, the front office. I'm going to work in the office in finance and ticketing and baseball operations, player development. And then I get there and the general manager brings all the interns into a conference room. And he says, "It's great to have you all here. Tomorrow, I want everybody to bring a pair of old clothes to keep in the locker room so that you can help the grounds crew pull the tarp on and off the field when it rains." And there's a lot of puzzled looks in that conference room. And somebody asks, like, isn't that what the grounds crew's for? Or don't we have a grounds crew? And he says, yes, we have a grounds crew. But let me tell you the difference between the major leagues and the minor leagues. The major leagues have a much bigger budget, a lot more personnel. They have a grounds crew, maybe 25, 30 people. In the minor leagues, we might have 5 or 6 people on our grounds crew. He says, so in the minor leagues, we all have to pitch in. Me, the general manager, our CFO, our VP of ticketing, our head of merchandise, and all you interns, we're all going to help pull the tarp. And I pulled the tarp that summer. I also did all these other odd jobs. I dressed as the mascot. I drove players to the airport. I cleaned up fireworks debris in center field. I parked cars. I inflated moon bounces. I did essentially any task that was asked of me. Not only was I doing any task that was asked of me, I was looking around. I was seeing all these other people do any task that was asked of them as well. And from that point forward, it kind of reinforced in me this philosophy that, you know, that my parents had kind of taught me and raised me on, you know, to be humble, to lead by example. And I just added another piece to that. It was to pull the tarp. And this pulling the tarp moment, right, was, it's kind of symbolic. But what happened was, as I went off into my career, I began to start managing teams. I began to start leading teams, hiring people, developing teams. I kept coming back to that summer, you know, where 5 or 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years prior, I had been out there with the grounds crew pulling the tarp and doing all these odd jobs. And I started kind of to myself saying, you know what, the people who are the most productive, the people who I enjoy working with the most, the people who I want on the team the most, they're tarp pullers. They're willing to do whatever it takes. They roll up their sleeves. They model the behaviors they want to see in others. They lead by example. And since then, this everybody pulls the tarp mantra and mindset has been something I have been so passionate about. You could even say obsessed with, right? Sure. I've been obsessed with kind of finding these tarp pulling moments all over the world in every corner of the earth that happen every single day, but either we don't necessarily see them because we're not looking for them, or we certainly, maybe we see them, but we don't celebrate them enough. Like you described, you know, the CEO making cold calls, the CEO working in the warehouse, the coach unloading the team's luggage, the star quarterback cleaning up the movie theater after a team movie night. There are countless moments like this, these tarp pulling moments, as I describe, and we talk about every week, and everybody pulls the tarp, that I've just become so passionate with about in terms of illuminating and kind of trying to live my life to the standards of being a tarp puller.
You started your podcast in a very different stage of life than where I was when I started mine. Right? I started mine when I was an undergraduate, very unclear on what I wanted to do professionally in specific terms, both in terms of industry and skills I wanted to lean into, and just very unestablished. Right? You started yours in a position of already being established, right? You're in the same job now that you were in when you started the podcast, maybe, or same company, maybe your role has evolved. And yet you still kind of continued with the podcast for the same several years. What, besides finding these and sharing these stories, was kind of the initial intention with this podcast? Like, why did you decide to start it? And how much is that you're still your same motivation today? Because a lot happens over a 3-year period.
Yeah, to be totally clear and transparent, the podcast is an independent venture from my job, Morgan Franklin. So the podcast is a passion project and something that I develop and manage on my own with the help of a few others around me. However, the podcast, I think, if you really need to boil it down, you know, like the Steve Jobs phrase, like I'm not going to get it exactly, but like you can't connect the dots going forward, but you can connect the dots going backward. And I think that speaks to what I'm going to share a little bit now. I mean, when I look back on my career and broader, like more broadly my life, two common threads in my life have always been curiosity and connection. I am always curious. People will almost joke sometimes, like I'll ask questions, you know, when people are tired of giving answers, or, you know, I'll read books on topics that, you know, are completely unrelated to books that I had, you know, or topics that I had read about before. And I'm also deeply passionate about connecting with others. I've seen the power of helping someone by connecting them with someone that can be helpful to them. I've seen the value in helping two people that can be helpful to one another. And so many people over the years have connected me with other people that have been not only helpful to me and valuable to my career, but have turned into friendships and and relationships and trusted partnerships and different things. And so I think when you boil it down, two things that have always been a through line for my life: connection and curiosity. And the podcast was a vector for me to kind of go on a journey that would kind of merge the two. It would enable me to connect in a deeper way with people that I already knew and learn more about, you know, what makes them tick and what has made them successful and challenges that they've overcome and how they've navigated that. And it would also give me an opportunity to connect with people that I didn't know before, completely new individuals that I could learn from and do all the same things that I just described. So I think that was the through line. And then again, it was how do I do it in a way that's inclusive and enabled me to draw the circle wide. And I just felt like the podcast medium and while I do put, you know, videos on social and at times have shared episodes on YouTube, I've been really passionate about, at least for now, about the audio piece of it, because I think there's a level of intimacy with audio that you don't get from the other mediums right now. And, you know, it was really cool. And sometimes kind of funny, early on in the podcasting, when I would hear from people and they would say, you know, I take my walks with you, I listen to your podcast in the shower. Somebody reached out and said they were listening to the podcast while they were breastfeeding, you know, in the middle of the night. And, you know, I go on walks, I listen to you in the gym. There's like a level, I think there's just a, first off, you can, with audio, you can consume it in so many different places and so many different, you know, so many different ways and times. But I also think when you're listening to audio, you're in a deeper, more reflective state than maybe you are through other mediums. So long-winded answer, but curiosity, connection, and creating it in a medium that I think people could engage with and really learn from and reflect on was super important to me.
I think that's very aligned with a lot of our reasoning. I don't know if it was our framed in the same way, but I'd certainly say those made it into the calculus. Now, though, so that was May of 2020 when your podcast had released its first episodes. Right now we're coming into 2024, recording this in January. When I think about it, right, you have all sorts of competing priorities all the time, right? You get an email, this SaaS discharged you again for another month of this, and you look at your backlog of episodes and it's running low. What makes you continue? Because you're basically making the decision every single day to continue putting in the effort. You know, 4 years in, why are you still making the decision to keep putting in the effort?
Well, I've always been more intrinsically motivated than extrinsically motivated. So I love nothing more than like setting a goal or a challenge for myself and then meeting that goal or challenge that I've set for myself. And I'm also, you know, somebody who's incredibly, or I kind of pride myself on trying to be disciplined, and I'm a creature of habit. So, you know, I'm one of these folks where if I didn't put out an episode every week, I don't know what would happen, because it would be one of these scenarios where I would fall off the train and then I'd have trouble getting back on. So I think part of it, you know, is by design. I like the serial nature of it, that, you know, I've decided to do a podcast every week. You know, at this point I may change, you know, who knows, I could change and evolve it over time, but I decided to do something every week. I want it to be part of people's existence, right? I want it to be consistent and reliable, so that people know that every Thursday morning they're going to get content from me. They're going to get a conversation that they can count on to, you know, listen to in the car, listen to on a walk, listen to at the gym, and learn from. And that was super passionate. You know, that was super, super important to me. And I said at the beginning, I said, you know what? Even if my grandmothers are the only people who listen to this podcast, I'm still going to do it, because every week I learn. It forces me to go down rabbit holes that maybe I wouldn't go down otherwise. And it's a commitment that I can make to myself and a goal I can set for myself and achieve. And I think when you build muscle in your mind that you can achieve things and do difficult things, it only compounds in other aspects of your life and makes, you know, it makes me a better leader. It makes me a better husband, a better father, a better friend. When you can do hard things, and I would classify making content every single week as something that's hard, and you appreciate, I'm sure you have an appreciation for that. That's kind of the calculus. But I've always been more intrinsically motivated than I am extrinsically. Now, that said, like, I'd be crazy if I told you like that, you know, I don't look at the metrics to see, you know, what episodes are resonating. Is the podcast growing right? And I don't look at growth necessarily as something that is like a vanity metric. I look at growth as a kind of an indicator that you're putting something out that people, that other people value. I look at it as a mechanism that will enable me over time to make the platform even bigger, which means I'll be able to reach even more people and positively impact more lives. So I think about it that way. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I set internal goals for myself. I say, I'm going to do 20 weeks on, and then I generally do six to eight weeks off, where I kind of fine tune some things, share old episodes, harvest some of the lessons, and let things kind of soak in. And then I'm going to do another 20 episodes where I do 20 weeks in a row. And I love that. I love that constant challenge. I love the constant challenge of finding new potential guests, booking guests, going down a rabbit hole and kind of advancing those conversations to learn about them as much as I can. And then asking them, you know, the questions that I think people listening want to know. I've always thought about the podcast as I'm sitting in a coffee shop for 30 minutes with somebody really interesting. There's somebody sitting at the table next to us who's eavesdropping. And I'm trying to put myself in their shoes and say, if they're eavesdropping, what would they want to know? Based on what the person answers, what is the next question they want me to ask? And that's how I've approached it.
You mentioned that period of consolidation. That might be something they need to borrow. I think that's a valuable piece of the equation, is to budget a few pieces of like breaks. I kind of did that this year in the holidays. It took about 3 weeks between publishing episodes, not really for much reason besides I had them in the backlog. I just didn't publish them for a couple of weeks. And I think it was kind of nice mentally. Then when I got back to publish them in the past week or two, I was like, feels good to be back. But I had them the whole time. So I like that a lot. You mentioned, you know, analytics and episodes, not from a analytics perspective in terms of an episode that maybe like got a lot of attention and brought a lot of people to the show and new listeners, but from an internal kind of qualitative perspective, are there interviews that stand out to you? I would call it like a turning point interview, where you received a nugget in that conversation, whether from the person or something you encountered during research. Does something happen in the process of making that interview a reality where a switch turned off in your brain and you changed as a person and you look back on it and like see it as a different chapter of your life before and after set interviews? Are there any that stand out in your mind? I can give several from my own show.
You know, Lewis, that's a great question. I don't know. Well, first off, I can kind of now in my life kind of there's Andrew before the podcast and there's Andrew since starting the podcast. Like, so there's clearly a line there, and the line is not, and the line is for me, it's a change in the way I see personal and professional development. My ability to develop myself as a husband, as a father, as a business person, as a leader, as a friend is so much better now that I've been able to kind of build muscles of learning in different ways. And what I mean by that is like you go through elementary school and you go through high school and you go through college and graduate school or whatever. And those were all for me great experiences, positive experiences. And then you get out into your career and, you know, there's trainings and there's organized mentorship programs and there's informal mentorship programs. And all along the way, like I was trying to figure out like how to learn. Like I was never the smartest person by any stretch in any class I was ever in. I was never the most athletic in any sports team I've ever been a part of. And I don't think there's ever been a room that I've been in where I'm the smartest person. And I've always kind of wrestled with this, how do I learn? What's the best way for me to learn? And so before, I think since starting the podcast, I have learned how to learn better than I ever have. And that doesn't mean that you have to go out and start a podcast to be able to do that. But I think what it means is you have to try and learn through different mediums, like learn by reading different books, learn by listening to podcasts, learn by asking people questions, learn by researching and figuring out the best way to research someone or something before you're going to have a conversation or a meeting with them. And this applies to anything. So that's been kind of cool to kind of see how that has evolved. I think, you know, specifically around, are there specific conversations or guests that have kind of changed, you know, the way I think about things or how you put it?
It doesn't have to be how you, you know, changed everything for you, right? To someone who like shattered something, you're like, whoa, you know, I had not
heard
that before. Like one example for me, this was in the first 30 episodes. And I think that's probably not uncommon that happens for podcast hosts, is like that a big change happens in the first 20, 30 episodes. There's this, I say kid, right? He was my age and he still is my age. Will Brown, I had him on in the summer of 2020. So when I was about 3 months into the show, and I don't know, he was, you know, my age, a little bit younger. He was no bullshit. He had made a lot of money already. And he was like very direct, kind of an asshole in a desirable way, in my opinion, like asshole in the sense of like assertive self-confidence, not really, didn't care if he particularly offended you. So not like purposely mean for the sake of being mean. It was just like, I'm going to be who I am. And if that bothers you, you deal with it. So some people call that an asshole. Other people call it confident, not important distinction. But anyway, I encountered that and I was like, oh, wow, I've never seen that behavior from someone who isn't like fictional or like 50. You know what I mean? So that was just like, I just saw many things differently after that day.
Yeah, there. I mean, there's hundreds. I keep a list. I keep a list of like what I call these micro lessons. Like after an episode or a conversation, I'll kind of jot down kind of lessons and takeaways that I have. And then what's interesting is, and sometimes I'll do this during the breaks. I'll either go back to like a transcript or I'll listen back to an episode, and I'll come away with totally different takeaways. But one of the moments that really sticks out to me, I interviewed a former college football star, Eric LeGrand, and you know, if for anybody listening who, or doesn't know Eric's story, you know, Eric was a college football player, a star football player at Rutgers University many years ago, and he was tackled during a game and became paralyzed. And doctors told him, you know, basically within days that he would never walk again, never breathe on his own without a ventilator, and, you know, he would never eat solid foods. And he basically said, watch me. And, you know, within a few weeks, he was off the ventilator. He was eating solid foods, and he vows that one day he will walk again. And he says it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. And that's today how he looks at the opportunity to walk again. But he said something during the conversation that I probably thought about every single day since. And he talked about keeping things in perspective. He said he was in the hospital after his spinal cord injury, and he would start to feel bad for himself, understandably so. He is in one of the worst possible situations you could be in. And he would start to look around the floor that he was on at the hospital and the rehab facility. And he said there were other patients. He said there were patients that would die. He said there were patients whose spouses divorced them in the middle of their, you know, after their a traumatic injury or during the rehabilitation process because they didn't want to, you know, stick around for that part of the relationship. He said there were people in there that had no visitors, nobody coming to visit them. And he said, Andrew, he said, I had family. I had my coaches, my teammates, friends coming to visit. I had people all over the world who were learning my story and rooting for me. And he said, and I would just think to myself, what do I have to complain about? And obviously he had a lot, there was a lot he could have complained about. And it's just something that I've thought about probably every day since then. And I try really hard not to complain. We all need a place to go or people to go to when we want to vent. We want to let off some steam. And obviously, you know, bad things happen, and you got to deal with them, right? That's like part of life. But when Eric shared that, it's something that's kind of always stuck with me, that you have to always keep things in perspective, and that you can always look around and find somebody who's going through something even more challenging than you are. And that was a helpful lesson for me and something I'll always think about.
Yeah, I think if any part of your mind is like, did I answer his question? You can shut that down. That's what I was looking for. Something like that, where there's like a thought has entered your head and hasn't left rent-free for approximately however many days between that podcast and now. So
the thought hasn't left. And I'm glad I answered your question, Lewis. And I think the chat, there are, people always ask me like the question of like, what's your favorite episode? What's your favorite conversation? Like I can't answer that because I don't have one. I learned something
like that. Yeah.
I've learned something from every single conversation, and there's something from every single conversation that gives me an extra degree of motivation, an extra degree of energy. And certainly kind of thought, you know, something that provokes, you know, new thought or additional thought in my mind. You know, again, there's way too many individual examples to name, but like one of the other common themes has been that's really kind of left an imprint on me is the concept, the role that adversity plays in any path to success. Whether it's an Olympic athlete, whether it's a professional athlete, whether it's a Grammy winner, whether it's a TV star, an entrepreneur, a CEO, every single one of these stories, Lewis, they all have periods of adversity or moments of adversity that not only do they overcome, but they play a role in getting them where they ultimately want to go. Like they respond to it in a way that actually like compounds the chance that they're going to have success. And a great example of this is an Olympic athlete, Michelle Carter. And I've tweeted about this story before, but Michelle throws the shot put, and Michelle has competed in 3 Olympics. And in you know, each time the goal was a gold medal. And the first time she competed in the Olympics, I think she finished like 12th. And the next time she competed in the Olympics, she finished 8th. And the next time, I'm going to give away the punchline, she won gold, right? So every step of the way was like this incremental progress, you know, to getting there. You know, every coach that I've talked to, and I've talked to over 10 either national or conference coaches of the year, and so many other coaches as well, who I think one day I'll win coach of the year awards, but they all talk about adversity. They talk about adversity with their players. And that's something that has really stuck with me as well, is that I don't even look at adversity the same way as I used to look at adversity. I look at adversity as an opportunity. Like, this is a moment. This is a moment that I'm going to get through, and I'm going to come out of it, not just through it, but better. And that's been another, you know, I think, something that's kind of really, really stuck with me.
I think related is spotting talent. That's something I love to do with the podcast, right? Bringing someone on before they're recognized. So it's awesome. And I think you probably do a mix of this as well, right? Someone who has won that Coach of the Year award, who is to some extent validated as a great coach, right? They got the results, they got the frameworks, they're great, let's learn from them. Then there's also what you just said, these people who aren't the Coach of the Year, but you're like, mark my words, one of them's going to be one day. Tell me about a story with someone who maybe you interviewed them years ago and that talent has been validated since when you already found them until now, or someone who you're like, this, the world doesn't know about this person yet, but they should.
So a great example of this is an assistant basketball coach at Western Michigan University, my friend Manny Desange. He's become my friend through the podcast because he started as a listener, he eventually was a guest, and now he's going to be a lifelong friend, because him and I see the world very, very similarly, and we just always have great conversations when we talk. But here's Manny's story. So Manny was listening to the podcast, had reached out, you know, to tell me how much he enjoyed it. And I love, you know, meeting people from around the world who are listening to the podcast. So we actually, we set up a time to chat and learn more about, you know, what each other had going on. And I was curious, that we weren't recording a podcast at the time. We were just having a phone call. I was out walking through a park near my neighborhood. And I said to him, I said, Manny, he was a graduate assistant at the time at Michigan State, one of the greatest, you know, basketball, you know, from history's perspective, one of the greatest basketball teams, you know, on the planet. And I said, Manny, you didn't go to Michigan State. You didn't play at Michigan State. You know, how did you get like one of these really cool jobs at Michigan State? It's like a coveted role to be a graduate assistant on Tom Izzo's staff. And without even taking a breath, he's like, well, I networked a bunch. I got to know a bunch of people in the coaching industry, and I was coaching high school basketball in Canada. And one of the coaches at Michigan State said, if you ever want to come watch us practice, come watch us. The door's always open. So on my off day, I got in my car. I drove from Canada to the US and I watched them practice, and then I went home that day later. I was like, what? So I'm like doing the math, I'm pulling up Google Maps. I'm like, okay, wait a minute, Manny. You drove across the Canada US border on your off day from coaching these high school kids. You drove 600 miles round trip. You went to watch a practice, you took notes, you got in the car and you drove home across the US Canada border. He says, yes. And then every off day, I pretty much did the same thing for a while until a spot opened up on the Michigan State staff, and they were like, who's that guy that comes from Canada to watch us practice? We should offer this spot to him. And then he joined the Michigan State staff. And now he's always had this dream of being a head coach at the Division I level. Now he's an assistant coach. He's, you know, kind of moved up the coaching ranks from graduate assistant to assistant coach at Western Michigan University, working with one of the guys that was on that staff at Michigan State. And I said, man, you got to come tell the story on the podcast. And Manny's an example of a guy who was just willing to do whatever it takes to put himself in a higher likelihood of achieving a goal that he had set out for himself. There are people all over every single day who set goals for themselves. And then there are people who set goals for themselves and are willing to do these uncommon, non-glamorous, tarp pulling, you know, moment type of things that I described to try and not guarantee that it's going to happen, because you can't guarantee that something's going to happen, but you can increase the likelihood that something good is going to happen by doing things like that. So Manny is, in my mind, a rising star on the coaching front. He's going to go on to accomplish even bigger things than he already has. And I'm so glad that through the podcast, you know, his was a story that we were able to tell, at least the first couple chapters of it, because I think he's got, you know, he's got many, many, many chapters ahead. And that's, again, are there people who wouldn't, you know, are there people who wouldn't have had Manny on the podcast because he wasn't a, you know, a head coach? He wasn't, you know, doing this. He hadn't accomplished that yet. He hadn't won an award yet. But I heard and saw something in Manny that was like, you know what, this is, there are people out there in a lot of different industries and a lot of different facets of life that are going to relate to this and need to hear this story, Manny. So that's an example. But, you know, I've interviewed coaches before they were named coaches of the year, and I've interviewed, you know, CEOs before their companies have taken off, and, you know, authors before they had bestsellers. And it's both kind of angles of the journey are equally as fascinating for me.
I think what's especially fun about that is capturing from a documentation perspective, or I don't know about documentation, that sounds a little technical and corporate, but you are documenting and capturing the raw, what he was like during the come up, right? Like, that is the energy of someone in the hustle, in the thick of it, versus everyone, this is just extremely human, right? Either underplays or overplays. Very few people reliably narrate something that happened 5 years ago. They're like, oh man, when I was going through it, I was going through it, man. And that's like kind of all they can say about it, because it was 5 years ago. It's like, man, I can't describe anything from 5 years ago better than that either. So I think that's really fun as like a contribution to society that you do by doing the show the way you do it.
Yes. And you get, because as great as the conversations are, when you get to talk to somebody who's won 3 gold medals or has the best-selling book or won the Grammy or has the Emmy Award, there probably is some degree of like survivorship bias, right? That people listening are saying, okay, like this person made it. What about all the people that didn't make it? And in Manny's case, this was somebody who, it depends on what your definition of making it is, right? If your goal is to coach college basketball at the Division I level, Manny's doing it. If your goal is to be a head coach at Division I level, he hasn't gotten there yet. If your goal is to win the Naismith National Coach of the Year at the Division I college level, he could do that too, but he hasn't done it yet, right? So I think you're totally right. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's both are equally valuable to learn from. They're just different. And there's somebody who's in the thick of it who says, you know what, like I don't want to always hear a success story and like kind of reverse engineer it. I want to hear from someone who's going through it now and why they're pressing forward and how they're pressing forward. I think both are equally valuable. I love both types of those conversations.
I think one thing I have loved learning from the podcast is it's a bit of a duality in terms of like, it's both true and untrue, right? Like I've definitely learned to trust my own taste but I've also learned to ignore my own taste for the same reason of like, you know, I at one point in time only wanted to hear the, let's say, successful person is, you're right, maybe what can appear to be feeling more risk averse, right? I'm like, I don't want to hear anything from someone who hasn't done the exact thing I want to do. This isn't useful to me. I'm closed-minded. I'm specific. And so I'm only going to publish interviews that align with like that feeling I have intuitively right now. But then there've been times where like there's an interview where I'm like, I don't know if that was my favorite interview and I don't think anyone's going to like that. And then like, that's the ones you get feedback on. That's just like, dude, I love that. That was exactly what I needed to hear. And it's just a reminder that's like, I'm just one person who was experiencing one emotional state at one point in time. And what I needed is very different than what other people needed. So even if it's like, I didn't relate to that guest the way I've related to a lot of other guests who like, you know, surprise, surprise, don't look exactly like me and aren't in the exact circumstance in life. It's like, I have more than one archetype of person listening to the show. So kind of continuing to yet again, not trust my own taste, but be like, there's more happening here than I understand. And that will always be the case.
I've kind of gone through an evolution, I think similar, Lewis, in the sense that I think early on, I really questioned, I always feel like I have some level of imposter syndrome. Like, I shouldn't be doing that. Like, what have I done to deserve to interview that person or et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I've been able to kind of manage that. One of the things that I struggled with early on was how many different topics and genres should I go into? You know, like, should I interview scientists? Should I interview doctors? Should I interview,
I love that.
Should I interview musicians? Like, I don't really know much about music. You know, I've always been a sports fan and I know a lot about sports, but I've interviewed people in sports that I historically hadn't followed. Like I, I didn't know a lot about the shot put. You know, I've interviewed some fencers. I didn't know anything about fencing. So early on, I really struggled with that. And I kind of got to the answer the same way that you kind of just described for you. And it was, there's a lot of different people listening to that, to this, and they're not in the same, you know, mental state with the same, you know, set of experiences and mindset and perspective that I have in the moment that I'm recording this. And there's people are going to be able to take all kinds of different things from this. And then what I began to realize was that sometimes the conversations where I was going further out, the further I was going outside of my kind of comfort zone, I was actually interviewing better and learning more. And it kind of redefined how I do my preparation for interviews. So the beginning,
exactly what I was going to say. It's like the research paradox is the next kind of duality.
Correct. So I've also kind of always enjoyed watching interviews and listening to interviews by famous interviewers and non-famous interviewers. And I've always constantly trying to learn. You're a great interviewer. And I know when I listen to you, I learned something from you. But I realized that at the beginning, I might've been researching too much and I was too prepared. And there's this fine line between too prepared and being like not prepared, right? So what I found was when I would go into a topic that I inherently and historically didn't know as much about, I didn't feel as prepared, and I still did okay. Because what I did was, this was early on in the interviewing, like when I was started to really interview on a weekly basis, I started to just ask better follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. I started to just follow that curiosity that I talked about, which has always been like a through line in my life. And when I would listen back and read the transcripts and get feedback from people, they were like, wow, you really just, you were just asking the questions that I was wondering, and you were following your curiosity, and we could tell, as opposed to kind of going through maybe like a battery of topics that you wanted to get to. And I thought that was really powerful. And it's kind of reshaped, and I'm constantly adapting the way I prepare and the way I interview and my interview style. I think it's an art. I think there's an art to it. There's a part science to it. And I'm just passionate about the art of interviewing. But now I try and find that right alchemy of preparation where you're not too prepared, but you're not underprepared. And from you're not too prepared that you're like no longer curious, but you're not underprepared that you don't know where to go.
I think that says it about right. You mentioned fencing and shot put. What are some other, let's go with non-sports specifically, what's been some story that stood out outside of the domains of business and sports? So I think that's kind of been, right, I'd say your two high level, at least, I don't want to speak for you, but two of your most clear, obvious, publicly expressed interests, so like business and sports. Like you said, there's entertainment, there's music. What's one kind of unexpected? I don't know about unexpected. I think we've used that word a few times here, but we'll just go with esoteric or niche that you are glad you explored that you weren't planning on exploring like on day one, right? Day one, you might've listed out like, here are the 10 categories of performers I could reach out to. Then 6 months in, you're like, oh, I didn't even think about this. Reached out to someone or someone came on your door and it was awesome.
I would say the music, the musicians, and the fiction authors have been remarkably fascinating and have challenged my thinking and my habits and the way I go about things in a way that I never could have imagined. And you know, I'm thinking about a conversation with an Academy Award winning screenwriter, and we got into such a deep conversation about, you know, how does he organize his day? How does he position himself to be creative? How does he handle criticism? Like all these things, which were, he was deploying in a discipline that was so different from anything that I've ever done. But I suddenly found ways in my own life to apply those same disciplines. That was really, you know, fascinating. The authors, the in particular the fiction authors. I've interviewed a lot of authors, in particular in that genre of historical fiction, and I've interviewed others as well. But again, going back to the same types of things, the way they organize their day, the way they go out and get feedback, the way they handle criticism, how do they think about, you know, how do they think about Amazon and Goodreads reviews? Do they want to read just the good reviews? Do they want to just read the bad reviews? Like they all have a perspective on this, and they've all, you know, are constantly trying to kind of fine tune how they do their art. And I've just been able to take a lot away from them in terms of, you know, how to be creative, how to be more organized, how to process information. And it's not just me that has said this. I actually have one or two coaches in particular that I've interviewed who follow the podcast, who've actually gotten back to me and said, I learned so much from listening to the authors that I can apply in coaching. So that's just one example. And then with the musicians, I think the thing about the musicians is people, especially like once, going back to what we said a few minutes ago, like once they've achieved fame and success, people forget how hard it was. And people forget that they like weren't famous. And I've done numerous conversations with Grammy winners. And, you know, one that comes to mind is I interviewed the drummer from Hootie and the Blowfish. And he told this story. And Hootie and the Blowfish, you know, obviously like one of the best bands in the 90s. Cracked Rear View, their album was a mega, mega success. They sold over 25 million records. And they've kind of, you know, like generationally passed from the cassette to the CD to downloads to streaming. Like they continue to be relevant. And Darius Rucker went off and had his own remarkable solo career that he's still having. And Hootie and the Blowfish are still...
Okay.
Yeah. And Hootie and the Blowfish are still touring. And the drummer, his name is Jim Sonnefeld. He goes by Sony. Sony told me the story. He said, you know, we were out, you know, quote unquote, touring. And we went to a show. We drove 3.5 hours and two people showed up. And so I said, what did you do? Like, how did you respond? He said, we played the show and then we went home. And he said, the bad news was that two people showed up and we drove 3.5 hours to do a gig. The good news was only two people knew that two people showed up. And that's something, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a content creator, whether you're an athlete, that I think is a really important lesson to remember, like along your journey, that it's like, it's not always what it, like it wasn't always like how it looks where you are today. And musicians are a great example of that. Because they have to hustle, and authors too, like they have to hustle way more than everybody like understands, right? You know, people think that writing the book or writing the song are the hard part. That's just the beginning. It's promoting the song, promoting the book, getting the flywheel spinning, much like a content creator kind of, you know, in today's ecosystem, you know, that you and I live in, right? There's a lot to be learned from them.
Completely. I think that's, if I was going to classify a lot of my bigger takeaways from this conversation. And I always group the conversation, meaning like everything that went on in my head since, you know, we agreed to do this podcast, right? So that includes spending time researching you and all that. Like I bundle all of that into this experience and like, those are the inputs and then I'm the output, right? And I think that is that a big oversight, and I want to say oversight in a critical sense, but a big area for improvement that's a bit more positive and also equally true is I've been very narrowly interviewing mostly just entrepreneurs, right? Entrepreneurs, authors, content creators, but it's not been too many people out of scope of like, let's just bring in someone who I wouldn't have even thought of. Like I had a musician on between episode 0 and 10, maybe another one in the first 20. I think that's it. And it's like one filmmaker and published the episode. That's just because he had bad audio. That was like episode 2. So, you know, a lot of beginner mistakes. So I think that is what I'm hearing from the universe, bringing the two of us together, that I should be doing to level up what I'm doing. So I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad I could help in that regard. And the other thing that's been interesting, people always come to me and they say, wow, you've interviewed so many famous people, or you've gotten to know so many celebrities, or whatever phrase they want to use. Those conversations have been fantastic. But I'm always also quick to remind people that some of the most powerful conversations are with people who aren't what you would describe as famous, or they're not famous yet. And we kind of talked about this a little bit with Manny. They're on the rise, or they're not, it's not that they're on the rise, but they have a story that just needs to be told. And one of the greatest examples of this on the podcast is a teacher in Minnesota. I ran across a story about a teacher who, you know, had a class of students last year in a school, elementary school, where they had, I believe it was seven or eight students in the elementary school used wheelchairs. And the playground at the school was not wheelchair accessible. And the kids who used the wheelchairs would just sit on the side in their wheelchairs during recess. And the teacher, this fifth grade teacher, Betsy Julian is her name, She had a son who used a wheelchair that went to the school. She and the principal and some others on the staff wrote a grant application for a wheelchair accessible swing. They received $35,000 for the wheelchair accessible swing, which, believe it or not, only covered 50% of the cost of this wheelchair accessible swing. So she comes into the class and she's talking to an entire class. And again, these are students that don't use wheelchairs. These are elementary school, fifth and sixth graders. And she holds up this check and she says, would you guys want to help me raise the other $35,000? Could we do that as a class? And then one student asked a question that literally changed the arc of their lives. One student, a fifth or sixth grader, he looked at her and he said, Miss Julian, why aren't we doing the whole playground? And that set in motion a turn of events where she organized the class. They basically, a group of fifth and sixth graders, 25 of them, they basically turned themselves into like a fundraising corporation. And they made cold calls. They created fundraising events. They organized into committees, different things. They've raised over $700,000, Lewis, fifth and sixth graders, to build the wheelchair accessible playground at their school. So they're going to build the wheelchair accessible playground at their school. And now they want to go help other schools in their district do the same thing. They want to start a nonprofit that does this for schools all over the country and the world. And it's a story that, again, is not somebody who's famous. It's not somebody who is well-known, but it's somebody who has a story that when you hear it, it can literally change your life. And the way it changed my life, the way it changed my thinking, it was one of the most powerful reminders I've ever had that nobody is too young, too old, too rich, too poor, too smart, too dumb, unathletic, like nobody is too anything to not be able to make an impact. And I just fundamentally believe that like more of those stories need to be found. And that's part of the calculus and the equation that I've been thinking about a lot is how do we find those stories too? Because there's a lot to learn from the people who've achieved global fame and success in kind of the typical like definition of success and fame that we talk about as a society. And then there are stories happening all around us where people are making a difference and that we can learn from them.
I think that's an amazing place to end this conversation. You've maybe shared, I don't know, 7, 8 good stories in this podcast, 7, 8 total stories. All of them were good. And there's close to 200 on the podcast. I'm sure you probably are like, damn, I can't believe I left that one out, this one out, this one out, and this one out. So where is this podcast where people can access all of the stories, not just the 8 we were fortunate enough to remember today?
The podcast is called Everybody Pulls the Tarp, and it's available where everybody gets podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And you know, as Lewis mentioned, I'm also really active on Twitter at Andrew H. Moses. That's Andrew H. Moses. And then on LinkedIn as well, I constantly, you know, publishing content and recapping lessons learned and takeaways from all these conversations.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Andrew.
Lewis, thank you so much for having me.